club football, he pisses all over him. So
yeah. It's just Messi. We all know what Messi can do.
A lot of flair, a lot of skill.
People might forget the names, but the streets certainly won't. Hello and welcome back to another episode of the FC Lowell podcast. The Premier League is a big league, a massive league, and one that many people will say is the best out there. But there have been some huge names that haven't managed to play in the Premier League. And today we'll be looking at those and we'll be ranking the 10 best to never play in the Premier League. And joining me today on this one is Connell from the Barstoolers pod. How you doing, sir?
Yeah, not too bad at all. Basically finished with my academic academic career, essentially finishing college. Talking to you about that before we started recording. And yeah, looking forward to getting into this. Definitely a difficult one. My list is it's quite malleable. It's quite hard to rank some of these players because they're so good. But hopefully we'll do that.
Yeah, I think I said to you before, like, this is possibly the hardest topic that I've ever done. But it's one that had to be done, I think. Like, the way I found it, I did actually have quite a clear top three, but after that, it was just ridiculously hard. Mm-hmm. I was just coming up with all sorts of names. How did you sort of get on?
I start with one, like, leftist. And then I came back and was like, there's no way that person is second. You know, for example, the person that I have in 10th was originally second in my first list. Then I looked at that and I was like, whoa. I need to curb my enthusiasm there. I had to change it all. But yeah, I think I'm confident with my order, at least. But like, you could switch my number 4 with my number 10 and I wouldn't really complain with you too much, you know? So yeah. Be interesting.
How I've done it, so and just for the listeners, so where we are judging it from the Premier League from the start, so that's from 92 onwards. There's a few players which are just completely ruled out, like technically Marco van Basten was still playing. But he barely kicked a ball since the Premier League started. I think people like Lothar Matthäus probably, again, did most of his stuff before 92, and, you know, Baggio and people like that. So those sort of guys that were mostly 90s guys didn't really come into mind too much. I don't know if you're sort of the same and looking at that way.
Yeah, hopefully I don't get crucified too much. I was also saying to you that mine is quite recently biased because, you know, I would have only started watching football really in like 2009.
Yeah.
And even then I was a kid, like, so, you know, but that's kind of all I can work off. I do have one or two from before my time simply because, you know, of legend, you know enough about them.
Yeah.
But most of mine are pretty recent. So could be a bit biased.
Yeah, did you have any honourable mentions?
Yes, I'm glad you mentioned that. I was originally going to have this player at number 10 on my list, but for the respect of your podcast and the integrity, I ended up not putting him in my list because he's simply nowhere near the top 10 players of all time, but he is my second favourite player of all time, and that's Chris Shields, who would play for my local team, Dundalk, or did play for them for nearly 10 years. He's my honourable mention because I love him so much. Yeah. But realistically, he doesn't compete with the other players on this list.
I'm just going to check mine.
I love him all the same.
No, I've not got him on mine either. I've just double checked.
Yeah. No, he signed for Dundalk, my local team, in 2012 when we had no money, like nearly went bankrupt. We finished bottom of the league that season. He came in at, I think, 20 years old and was the captain. That showed you the type of team we had. But somehow, some way, just kept staying in the team as we got better. And he got better. It, honestly, it was remarkable. From about 2017 onwards, he never played a bad game. It was bizarre how good he became. That's why I love him so much. But he's since left us, unfortunately. But yeah, just had to get in a mention for him. Love him.
Fair enough. I think I've seen him on some graphics that you've done before.
Yeah, you would have seen him play all right. I think you mentioned the last time that you're an Arsenal fan and the dog could have played Arsenal. So yeah, you would have seen him play at the Emirates. Would have had a lot of work to do, defence midfield.
Yeah. It's coming back to me a bit now. Yeah. Okay. All right. My honourable mentions, I'll just say goalies. I've just left all these sort of legendary goalies off because I was it's very hard to kind of pick which one. I didn't want to flood the list with them, so I've just kind of ruled them all out, really. And a guy that, again, I feel like I've seen you tweet quite a lot about, Karim Benzema. I feel like he might be one of your more favoured players, but he just missed out as well. But I definitely think he's one of the top three or four players like currently that hasn't played in the Prem for sure. So yeah, he's just missed out. But it was bloody tough near the bottom. It really was to get people in. But did you want to kick us off then with your number 10?
My number 10, quite apt. I've got Karim Benzema. Nice. You're dead right. He's one of my favourite players. Just because I respect how much he's just been around.
Mm.
Again, running back to, you know, he would have been linked to United when I like started watching football, and he's still on the go and better than ever.
Yeah.
And he's going through his career on Wikipedia before this, over 300 goals for Real Madrid over 12 seasons or so. And, yeah, remarkable. And actually in 2017-18, so the year they would have won the Champions League, he would have scored, obviously, after that Karius mistake.
Mm.
He only scored 5 league goals that season. And he wasn't injured. He made 32 appearances. And he was only scoring 5 goals. And to score the amount of goals he's scoring now at his age, it's remarkable. It goes to show, like, he's been amazing in Ronaldo's absence. He's really grew into it. Was always a good player. But kind of a very good role-playing striker. Like, he wouldn't score as many goals as Ronaldo or even Bale sometimes. But he's really grown into that role, and he's timeless. Just about gets in my list at number 10.
I really like Benzema as well. And as an Arsenal fan, like, he's been linked with us for years and years. Not now, but he was for a number of years. And yeah, I think he's just got it all, really. And just what he's doing now kind of makes me think, oh, was he just, as you said, playing that role, striker, to fully facilitate Ronaldo? And must be hard to do that because, Ronaldo's absolutely world-class, but he's not the same player that he was at Madrid. And part of that's probably age, but part of that's not even someone like Benzema there, is it, as well?
Yeah, fair play. Yeah, actually, I never thought about that. He would have helped Ronaldo's legacy a lot. Yeah.
Hmm. Yeah. Okay, so my 10. And it actually pains me to put him so low because he's one of my favourite players of all time. He's got some similar qualities to Benzema, and that is Francesco Totti.
Yeah, respect that. Look, I love Totti, but I didn't see him in his peak, at least. But yeah, great choice.
Yeah, in his peak, probably. So this would have been probably 3 or 4 years maybe before you sort of started watching football regularly. We've got like Channel 5 here. I think it was Channel 5 or Channel 4. Every like Sunday, the Serie A was on sort of mainstream terrestrial TV. And so I saw a lot of Totti back then, actually. And it kind of made me... in terms of my Italian team, pick Roma because of him. And yeah, just another one that could do it all, could score goals, killer pass, just so good at playmaking and just so elegant on the ball and stuff. And yeah, he's actually like Benzema a lot in many ways. But while Benzema left Lyon to go to Madrid, Totti probably could have made that move, but stayed at Roma his whole career. So yeah, you've got to respect that as well.
Yeah, I know. I think the one club man element definitely adds to it, because I don't know it, I don't know why, but it is a lot more impressive to have success over many years with one team.
Yeah,
I think it definitely does add an element, and yeah, even to add to their character. You know, as you said, there's definitely times where he would have been above Roma. They haven't always been great, and he definitely could have got a move. I've no doubt he was getting offers from huge teams. But yeah, no, that loyalty, it's, you know, it's a good character trait, and I think it definitely adds to someone's legacy. I mentioned that a moment earlier, but yeah, 100%, I agree.
Yeah, and it's a little bit off tangent, but I see Carlo Ancelotti is getting a lot of praise for winning leagues in five countries, but I mean,
mm-hmm.
I think it would have been more impressive if he stayed at, I don't know, AC Milan or something, and won three or four more Champions Leagues with them and a few more league titles with them, and kind of move around to PSG and Madrid and all the biggest sides, really. So yeah, there is definitely something to that one man stuff.
Absolutely. Will I go for my number nine?
Yeah.
Number nine, I think it's there's no doubt in the guy's actual quality, but it's probably more so to do with his trophy haul more than anything else. And he wasn't a one club man, but he was at one club for quite a long time. That's Dani Alves. Be, you know, absolutely unbelievable footballer in his peak, which lasted quite a few years, to be fair to the guy. But yeah, 43 trophies is insanity. Now, you know, a few of them are kind of, you know, cup winners, cups, you know, super cups and stuff like that. But, you know, the guy was imperious for years and is still with Barcelona, actually, now. He obviously came back to them. But he was brilliant with Sevilla as well, won a couple of UEFA Cups there. And yeah, probably, I don't want to, you know, a lot of people say that Trent Alexander-Arnold has kind of modernised the fullback role. I think probably Dani Alves walked so he could run.
Yeah.
And obviously quite different players, but I think Trent is quite a specialised fullback. You know, I don't think you're going to have lots of fullbacks like that who are essentially central midfielders. I think it's just a really weird circumstance which has led to Trent having that role in Klopp's Liverpool team. But I mean, Dani Alves is one of the main reasons, I think, why most fullbacks nowadays are attacking. I mean, the guy was rapid. He scored so many goals, so many assists over quite a long time, as I said. And nearly came to the Premier League, very nearly joined United in 2015, I think. But he opted to stay for an extra year, which is probably the right choice, before he went to Juventus, actually, where he won lots more trophies again. My number nine is Dani Alves.
That's a shout. Do you know, I didn't even think of Dani Alves, but yeah, he's won just a ridiculous amount, hasn't he? And yeah, you're right. In terms of that attacking fullback, I think that's the guy that you think of, really. Like, he probably did that side of the game better than anyone, even the likes of Trent and stuff now, for sure. Like, might not have been the best defensively, but Barcelona, that side, didn't really need him to be doing that. They needed him to be up the pitch and contributing. So, yeah, they're all going to be top shouts, aren't they, on this list? But,
yeah,
that's one that's gone a bit under the radar. But, yeah, I've got to think about that one, I think, for sure.
Mm-hmm. Probably by recency bias play there, but, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think all mine, other than a couple, are probably, well, recently, probably played in the last sort of 5 or 10 years at least.
Yeah.
But yeah, my number nine is one that maybe retired a bit earlier than some of the others, and that's Raul. So he was part
of a
couple of great Real Madrid sides in the late 90s and noughties, the Galacticos and stuff. Just top goal scorer, really, really good left foot. Just one of them guys. I think when I first got into football, he was one of the main men at the biggest side in the world. So there's definitely a bit of nostalgia to it. But yeah, he was just a class player. You've got to be really to play at Real Madrid for about 15, or 20 years or something is, yeah, they're pretty ruthless. So if you're not doing the job, then you're getting moved on. And his quality just shone through. A bit like Benzema, really, in that a striker to be there that long is going to be world-class the whole time.
Yeah, missed our Champions League before a couple of the other fellas came around a few years later.
Yeah.
He was great in Schalke's run to the semi-final in 2011 as well. So he was still decent for a while after he left Real.
Yeah, and you don't normally, I don't remember ever seeing kind of a Spanish player in the Bundesliga. That was one of the more prominent ones, to be fair. They don't normally go there, but yeah, even when he went there, it would have been about 35 or something, still banging them in at that age. But yeah, that's Raul at 9. Who do you have at number 8?
Number 8, probably a bit harsh on the guy, because I really, really rate him. And I didn't for a long time. I kind of thought he was a bit, not fraudulent, but maybe carried by some other players in his team. But as time has went on, I've appreciated more and more. And he's a bit of a shithouse. He's probably the biggest shithouse going, to be honest. That's Sergio Ramos. Again, another player.
I've got him 8 as well.
Oh, you have, yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah, another player who came from Sevilla. So they have a knack of producing some top players, clearly, from this list so far. But yeah, I mean, it's kind of an intangible quality, and it's probably said a lot more in American sports, but like the guy was just clutch. Like, if you needed a big goal, like he was a defender. He was a defender, and he would come up out of nowhere with a massive header. Of course, in the 2014 Champions League final, before they went on and won 4 in extra time, they needed that huge header. And so technically gifted as well. He started as a right back. Remember, it was Jose who converted him to a centre back, which I found a bit strange at the time. I would have been very young, obviously, but he went on to be amazing, and he took penalties a lot for Real as well. I'm sure he'd get a lot of goals. I might get that up now. But, I mean, the guy is absolutely quality. Not a tough time of it. He still won the league, but not a great sign by PSG, paying him a lot of money to do nothing. But, yeah, the guy was unreal for so many years and won so many Champions League titles.
Yeah. Yeah. And, yeah, even as far as the 2010 World Cup when they won that, he was playing right back at that time. So, for him to become like one of the best centre backs that we've ever seen as well is crazy. And one of my favourite Ramos moments, or maybe, you know, something that sums him up, was the other Champions League final against Atletico Madrid. I can't remember who it was. It might have been Griezmann or someone like that. It was sort of breaking through on the halfway line, and he just hacked him down, took in the yellow card. Would have been a goal. If they didn't do that, and he did it just the right moment where it wasn't like a last man red card type of thing, so he kept his team in the game and they ended up winning on penalties. And that's the thing, he was a bit dirty, but he knew exactly what he had to do to win. And yeah, as you say, clutch, so many clutch moments, whether that's goals or big performances. Or like last ditch tackles like that, yeah.
So yeah, I'm looking here, nearly 700 appearances for Real Madrid and 101 goals, over 100 goals from a centre back.
Yeah,
unbelievable.
Yeah, and I think he only started taking penalties like maybe the last couple of years. So if he had had that as well, then you're talking probably another 100 on top of that, like. I'm same as you on that. I'm number 8 for him.
Okay. My number 7, bit of a fraudulent selection, considering I never seen the guy play. I mentioned this earlier, but there's a couple that you just can't deny, and he would have retired the year I would have started watching football. He retired in 2009 and he started playing in 1985 or 1984, really. And 24 or 25 seasons, I suppose, with one club, that's Paolo Maldini. I mean, over 900 appearances for one club. If you include the national team, he made over 100 appearances for them. So over 1,000 appearances with just two teams. And yeah, all the trophies, the European Cups, the league titles, unbelievable. And there was that fact going around, or fact, I'll do air quotes. He played 189 games with Borghese and conceded 23 goals. Now, I'm almost certain that is false. I'm pretty sure someone disproved that.
I think what it was, because he a lot of the time he was left back until about probably the mid-90s. And Borghese played until about 97, 98, something like that. I think that stat was around when they played together at centre-back or something like that.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, what you said there, that's the equivalent of conceding about 4 or 5 goals in a full season. You're conceding like just over 1 in 10. But yeah, I remember seeing that and thought, that's a load of crap. But apparently there is something to that. It's a little bit, yeah. But yeah, I've got him a little bit higher on mine, but it was really hard to rank exactly where to put him. But I would say he's the best defender that I've ever seen. And many people would say the best defender ever, really.
Yeah, exactly.
He's up there with like Beckenbauer and people like that. So yeah, and the fact that he could do it left back and centre back as well was just incredible.
Another person that I had sort of in the running was Chiellini. But, you know, considering I've actually seen Chiellini and I haven't seen Maldini, but I couldn't in good faith put Chiellini ahead of Maldini. So that's why he does get on my list.
Yeah. Maldini, I wouldn't say there's a striker out there that kind of consistently got the better of him. And I can't really think of anyone else like that. And just the way that he played, yeah, it was just kind of really calm, confident, and yeah, he had some really good partnerships as well, like with Nesta. That's again the best sort of centre back partnership that I've seen, and that they work really well together. And yeah, as you say, with Borghese too, and yeah, he's just a leader as well. Like, yeah, he had it all.
Yeah.
Right, so my number 7, I'm going to say my number 6 as well, because they kind of go hand in hand. So I've got Iniesta at 7 and Xavi at 6, but I know a lot of people are the other way around, and I feel like it's a little bit of a coin flip, that one. But yeah, I imagine they might both be on your list, but yeah, just... These guys were something else when they were together. I think I had Xavi higher just because of like leadership, but they both did their job like just perfect.
Yeah, no, I have got them both on my list, and
are they one apart like, from each other?
Yes, exactly, because I couldn't separate them. they come as a package.
Yeah, fair enough.
Yeah, well, shall I move on to my number 6 then?
Yeah, exactly.
Maybe I talk about that a bit later. My number 6 is Philipp Lahm.
Okay.
I think he's there because I've always loved him. Like, maybe it's a bit generous having him on this list, but I've always loved him, and I've loved the type of player he was in terms of playing left back, right back, and midfield. You know, he won a World Cup. He won one or two Champions Leagues. I think one,
yeah.
Yeah, he wouldn't have been part of that 2020 team. When did he retire?
A couple of years, maybe, before that.
Yeah. But anyway, he was just so good, timeless, adapted perfectly. You know, he was always a fullback, but went into midfield in that 2014 World Cup team that won the World Cup, obviously. Mm. And I would have been sort of supporting Germany at that World Cup. They were just my pick to win it, so I kind of just went with them. And yeah. You know, I was delighted that they did win. So to see him go into midfield, I thought was absolutely the right thing to do, because his athleticism had gone at that stage. So he was kind of getting exposed by fullbacks, but he just effortlessly transitioned to being an unbelievable number 6. And yeah, probably some I don't know if bias is the right word, really. Maybe some sentimentality, just because I love them. For example, another player that I was going to put on this list, but of course he played in the Premier League, was Luka Modric. Mm. But obviously, it's that long ago that he played in the Premier League that, you know, I almost forgot. But yeah, I mean, what is football about if not enjoying footballers? So yeah, maybe some sentimentality there, getting in at number six above Maldini. But yeah.
Yeah, I'm sure I've said this before on another podcast about Philipp Lahm, but he was the best kind of opposition player that I've seen at the Emirates when Bayern beat us 3-1.
Mm-hmm.
He just destroyed us, really. Just was everywhere. Such a clever player. And yeah, he's one I really liked as well, because I used to play fullback, and I thought this guy's probably the best left back and right back in the world at the same time. Just, yeah, really, really good player. And you don't see that, do you, much? People that can play both sides to such a high level. Right?
Yeah, exactly. And then transition into being a number six and be equally as good, if not better.
Mm. Yeah, so I've said my 7 and 6, which is Iniesta and Xavi.
Mm-hmm.
So who is your number five?
My number five, again, slightly fraudulent because I didn't see the guy play, but he can't not get in the list. It's Zizou, Zinedine Zidane.
Okay.
Just an absolute joy to watch in clips. That's all I have, unfortunately. But yeah, I mean, the guy, I think I've said it once or twice here. Obviously a bit of a buzzword for me at the moment, but and possibly sometimes meaningless, but I think legacy absolutely matters in sport. You know, you can have certain players that may or may not be sort of objectively better than another player, but I think legacy matters. And again, it's such a, like, what does that even mean? But you know it when you see it. And Zidane's cultural influence, like, you can't deny that. I think that plays a major part, because he was such a unique player. For example, to talk about another Frenchman who I just absolutely adore purely because he is so unique, is Paul Pogba. Like, I support United and he's kind of taken the mick the last 3 years or so anyway, but I still love him because he's such a unique player. And Zidane was like that in a similar mold. Absolutely amazing. And again, to bring out stats or like factoids that are always brought up that he was never offside, just a bit of a tangent, absolutely false. There's clips out there showing that he was offside.
Yeah, I remember how this has made it. And seeing that he's been offside in the game, yeah.
It's an absolute myth. But yeah. I'm not sure what my point was there, but yeah, just to say that. Zidane a number five for me. Probably a bit harsh, but I didn't see the guy play, so.
Yeah, that's fair. I think if you haven't seen him, it's probably hard to imagine so much. But what I would say about him is he's properly a Premier League centre mid type. Like Lampard, Gerrard, Scholes, Vieira, and all that. Like, some of the players on the list, they again might not have been suitors at the Premier League potentially, but this guy would have been all over it for sure. And I've got him higher than like Xavi and Iniesta. I think you could argue they were more consistent over their careers for sure. But this guy just was the ultimate big game player, I think. Like, that's why he has that legacy. Like, a lot of his big moments came when everyone was watching.
I think it matters.
Yeah. There's obviously Brazil, the 98 final, but also in 06. In the World Cup, the performance that he put on there was insane. Like, he didn't score, he got an assist, but he was just toying with the midfield of like Ronaldinho, Kaká, Gilberto Silva. Just, it was like little boys playing against the grown man. Like, it was insane. Mm-hmm. And he could just do that. He could just make a world-class midfielder look like a little kid. And I think he was, maybe he wasn't the most consistent, but he still did have really good seasons, especially at Juventus, actually.
Yeah.
Probably he's most famous for Real Madrid, but
mm-hmm.
yeah, it was probably at Juventus where he was actually doing his best club football stuff. But yeah, legacy is a really good way to sum it up. And if the YouTube was around, I guess, as much then as it was now as well, like, he'd probably be even more viral. But yeah, he's definitely going to be one that's always going to be remembered, like, for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like, there's a local brand of clothes here where I live in Dundalk, and it's nothing to do with football. Like, it's kind of, they're kind of big on, I don't know, like, sort of aesthetically pleasing lifestyle brand or whatever. And there's posters of him just, like, on the beach with their brand logo on it. Like, it's nothing to do with football, but that's just his influence.
Yeah.
It probably shouldn't be brought into it, but again, I think it does. Mm-hmm. Where if you really break into that public, people's, that at the forefront of the public's minds, I think it does matter.
Well, he was the first guy to do the sort of predators. I know Beckham is like synonymous with it as well, but originally it was Zidane that was kind of the guy, and he's still one of the main people that like Adidas had for years and years too on their marketing and stuff. So yeah, I mean that probably tells you how good he is that you've not really seen him play, that but he's still up there in your list.
Yeah.
So my number five is a player that, when you talk about legacy, cult status and stuff, like my era growing up, this guy was everyone's favourite player or one of, and that is Ronaldinho, Mr. John Benito himself. The way that he played the game, like, always with a smile on his face, not a care in the world. But you do get people that do that, you know, like Quaresma, for example. But he's doing that, but he was doing that at such a high level that, like, he could win Ballon d'Ors, win World Cups, Champions Leagues, and still, you know, not have to play in this kind of rigid, tactical way that footballers seem to these days.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, he's just a wicked player. Just the way that he was just incredible, and a joy to watch, a magician, a wizard, all them sort of words come to mind for him, really.
Yeah, probably the last of, at this stage, probably a dead breed in terms of being able to play like that at the top level. Not saying it's a bad thing, but you know, it's understandable that it happens, that players are coached out of that, but you know, obviously as a neutral, as a fan, it's disappointing.
Yeah.
You know, you still get those players, but maybe not operating at the type of levels he was at.
Mm.
Exactly. He was under consideration in my list, as was Kaká, actually, but neither of them make it. But another Brazilian does. Again, another one that I wouldn't have seen in his prime anyway. He finished off, I think was it Corinthians? He ended up scoring a couple of goals. A bit of timber on at that stage.
Yeah.
R9, again, talking about cultural influence and legacy, amazing. Like, if you look at the clips of him, unbelievable. Like, just so good. But kind of plagued by injuries. But even if you look at his goal scoring stats, unbelievable. And he wasn't, you know, a Vinicius. He wasn't just sitting in the penalty box to score the amount of goals that he did, playing like he did, in that exhilarating, fast-paced style. Absolutely brilliant. Yeah, he has to get on my list, and he is number four. It's probably a bit generous, considering I never seen him play, but touching upon cultural impact and legacy, you can't get much better, really.
Yeah. A lot of people have this guy as, like, the greatest of all time.
I'm not having that.
With the injuries and stuff.
Yeah.
I think it's probably people that are maybe 5-10 years older than me and grew up watching him. But without the injuries, I do think he could have been the greatest of all time, because I would say he's the greatest under 21 of all time, maybe. Him or Pelé, probably. Because I think by the time he was 21, he'd won a couple of Ballon d'Ors, I think he'd got the world transfer record a couple of times as well.
Mm.
And yeah, it was just, I think he'd done it in about four different leagues by that point too. Yeah, this guy just drew fear into opposition defenders like no one really you'd seen before. And there's a clip going around, viral one of the France team in 98. I know they won 3-0 and it was the whole sort of seizure thing and all that. But yeah, the way that they were talking about him before the game, kind of mimicking what he did, and just you could tell kind of the way that they were talking about him and stuff, like the fear and also the kind of concentration. And yeah, they had to do a proper job on him, and he carried a level of respect that I don't think any other strikers did at that sort of time.
Yeah, again, drawing a lot of comparisons to Mbappe, and if Mbappe can have half the influence he had in the game, then yeah, he'd be doing okay.
Yeah. Yeah, I think Mbappe was kind of on that path as well. Maybe he needs to get himself out of PSG at some point to kind of reach his potential. But yeah, Ronaldo had done so much at such a young age. Like, yeah, it's just a shame for him that the knees and stuff didn't hold up, because yeah, he's ever so slightly higher on mine, but there's potential he would have been number one, you know, with without any injuries. But just crazy. You don't get strikers like that these days, that's for sure. But my number four is a name that we've already talked about a bit, and that's Paolo Maldini. So,
okay.
Yeah, it was difficult where to rank him exactly. In the end, yeah, I think I've gone for four. Probably trophy cabinet had a little bit to do with that, and kind of leadership and stuff like that. I don't normally put defenders kind of as high as that when we're talking, you know, these sort of lists. I'd normally try and favour the attacker as much as possible, but Maldini was just something special, really. I think he's one of the first names that would go on my kind of all-time team, whether that's at centre-back or left-back. I think either one really is capable of being in there for that. So, yeah, he's at four, and it's going to get a little bit familiar now, I think, on both of our lists, I gather. But, yeah, if you go for your number three...
My number three, we mentioned these two players earlier. Perhaps I should mention them in tandem as well, because that's kind of how I viewed them. And I think pretty much everyone views them pretty much inseparable, even to the point where I found it very hard to separate them in terms of order here. But I've went with your order. I've went with Iniesta before Xavi, so below Xavi.
Yeah, okay.
Probably because of the things you mentioned, those intangible qualities of being the captain, being the leader. And yeah, Iniesta, like, I find it interesting to see what type of player Iniesta would be in today's game. Like, I know he didn't leave Barcelona that long ago really, but he had such an interesting role in terms of being pretty unathletic, let's call a spade. I'd wonder if he would have had the same impact on the game if he was playing today, whereas Xavi's is more sort of a deep lying player who dictates the play, which never goes out of style. That's probably why I have him above him as well. But yeah, I mean, they won so many trophies together. I mentioned that word again, inseparable. Like, they're just, they really did come in a tandem. Obviously, Iniesta is a bit younger, so eventually they were split up. But yeah, I don't know how you can't not have these two guys, considering the trophies they won with both club and country.
Yeah, it's weird. I can't think of any other kind of partnership where, yeah, literally they pretty much always get talked together as a pair. Like, most of the time that doesn't happen.
Mm-hmm.
And even on their shirt numbers, I think one of them wears 8 for Barca and 6 for Spain, and one of them wears 6 for Spain and 8 for Barca. So
yeah,
even that, like, they can't even separate there. They've got to share their numbers. So, yeah, I'm the same. I, Xavi, because of the intangibles, shall we call it? I think Xavi was quite high in the running stats and all that as well. Maybe even Iniesta wasn't too bad in that. But yeah, it'll be interesting to see how these guys actually did in the Prem, because the centre mid role was a lot different. Like, a lot of them were kind of those gladiator type midfielders, and I don't know how well they would have done. Maybe they would have just been a class above. But
yeah. But Iniesta would have just been shunted out to the wing, really.
Yeah, yeah.
And he wouldn't have had the same impact, you would think.
Mm. Yeah, maybe if they're playing now, like, as well, Xavi would have more success now than if he was playing in, like, 10, 15 years ago in the Prem as well.
Yeah, definitely.
Mm. Yeah, mm-hmm. Completely.
That's my two and three, Don.
Yeah, yeah. So my two and three. So my number three, I went with R9.
Mm-hmm.
And my number two, I went with Zidane. So very difficult to split these, actually. And I think this was, although they played in different positions, this was kind of like the Messi-Ronaldo rivalry to a lesser extent, in that I think they both had like three Ballon d'Ors and were both seen as the kind of two best players in the world for a number of years. And it just depended on what side of the coin that you sat on, really. And I think I've probably always been a Zidane guy, really, in that argument. But there's not really much to split them. And I think R9 absolutely pisses all over him if he doesn't get injured so much. But he did. So,
yeah,
he's just free. And Zizou's too. But number one, I think we're probably going to have the same person at number one, right?
Yeah, it was a tough list apart from number one.
Yeah.
Sort of an anticlimactic ending, I suppose. But yeah, there's only ever one person, obviously.
Yeah. Yeah. I've gone with Lionel Messi.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's hard not to have him. I mean, for me, sort of without question, the best of all time. I don't know about you.
There was a question at one point, but I don't think there is really now, because I don't know, that Copa win kind of did really secure it for me. Mm-hmm. Like, I think before then, like the way that Ronaldo was going as well, I think, you know, is he the best of all time? But yeah, Messi is just, you could say he's the best goal scorer and the best playmaker, really.
Yeah.
And he's probably one of the best kind of pressers in his prime as well. Like that whole, all the Barcelona lot had to do it, didn't they, I suppose, to get the ball back so quickly. So yeah, he's, yeah.
Great. Yeah, and it was that 11-12 season where I think he got 110 goal contributions. I think he had something like, was it 80 goals that season?
Mm.
And then like 30 assists. Like, that's just... And he would have been pretty young. He would have been like 24 or something.
Yeah, yeah, because he's like, only...
Wow.
He's about mid-30s now, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What else can you say? 91 goals in the calendar year. Sort of that same period, you know, the calendar year 2012. Yeah, no, he's always been the best of all time. And that's from a United fan as well.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, there was never really any question for me. Still today. Well, like, you know, some people are saying now, because Ronaldo's still scoring goals. He scored during this recording in the Premier League. Well, Messi's only got 4 goals in Liga. But I mean, I think that's harsh to bring that in. Mm. That's like bringing in Michael Jordan's time with the Wizards. It's like, you know, who cares? They're both past their peak. Mm. I don't think it matters much.
Yeah, yeah, and Messi's won the league, and
well,
I know he didn't make the country, but like, yeah, it's not like them goals have particularly kind of done anything for them this year, but yeah, I suppose that was the argument a little bit for Ronaldo, the whole clutch thing as well. But I think Messi is clutch too. Just he might not necessarily get the goal, but he'll get the assist or the key pass or something like that as well.
I think sometimes maybe the whole clutch thing can be almost like subconsciously linked to physicality in some way, which obviously Ronaldo comes away. And, you know, if you need a cross, you know, if you need a last minute goal, you kind of think of a cross and a head goal, you know, so desperation maybe. So I think maybe someone's probably done the research to actually look into that. But I think the whole clutch thing is kind of a bit of nonsense with them too, to be honest. I think Messi's just as important, just as good in that sense.
No, I agree. I can think of some absolutely massive games that he's kind of, like, I think the Champions League semi-final against Real Madrid, like, they were both on the pitch and he got two goals at the Bernabeu.
I think that's it.
That's it, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, yeah. So those were our 10s. Now it's about getting this as a joint list. So one is pretty clear. We can mark that one off.
Messi.
So then it's... Yeah, it's... well, I guess it's easier to go sort of 2, 3, 4 like that.
I'm more than willing to let your selections go through, as I had them pretty high up anyway. So yeah, I'm willing to see that, definitely.
We'll put Zidane at 2 then, R9 at 3.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I think next then has got to be the two Spanish boys, right? Xavi and Iniesta. And thankfully, we've both got them in the same order, because we did a pod on the top 5 Spanish players ever. And I think I had Xavi and a couple of the boys had Iniesta. And I think we had to end up doing a joint first. Just couldn't split them. So it's good that we've got that the same way, really. So yeah, so there's that. And then, so I had Maldini quite high.
Yeah.
You had him fairly high, didn't you?
I had 7 as well, so I think 5 probably makes sense.
Okay. Oh, no, that's 6 actually, isn't it? Because you've got Iniesta at 5.
Yeah,
and then we've both got Ramos in there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I have Ramos directly behind Maldini, mine.
Yeah, okay. Put Ramos in. So then it's 8, 9, 10. So I'd love to get Totti in this, just because he's one of my favourite players. And actually, I really like Philipp Lahm as well. I really like that shout.
Mm-hmm. I think maybe because, obviously, it was kind of because of his loyalty, so like loyal to a fault. But I think if you are getting him in, I think you just have to just get in.
Yeah, I mean, I only had him at 10 in mine anyway, to be fair. So if we lock him in at 10 then we've got, I suppose, Lahm and any of like Ronaldinho, Benzema, Alves, Raul.
I didn't have him on my list, but I think Ronaldinho's probably the strongest candidate to get in.
Yeah.
Again, I have another what if there. Obviously, very nearly came to United before he went to Barcelona. It's a big what if.
I think he's it's pretty partly, isn't it? He wasn't on the list because he kind of wasn't in his prime when you were sort of watching football. But it's hard to compare him with anyone because he was so unique, definitely compared to kind of players these days. But he was a Ballon d'Or level player for sort of 3 or 4 years, and he picked up a couple of those. It wasn't the longest peak or anything, but when he was in his peak, he was top notch.
I did miss his peak, but I still loved him. I actually, when I was 9, I got a an AC Milan jersey with him on the back, number 80. So, yeah, I mean, again, if you talk about cultural impact, then yeah, I think he definitely deserves to get in.
Yeah, and I think this like YouTube kind of football highlight reel and stuff, I think he's probably the first one.
Yeah.
When would YouTube? About 15 years ago or something like that.
So 2006, I think, yeah.
Yeah, so he would have been definitely one of the first kind of major viral footballers in that sense. So, yeah, I mean, I'm happy to put him 8 or 9, really, whatever one with Philipp Lahm. You could definitely argue the case for either or, I think, on that.
I think maybe in terms of what he did achieve, I think I'd probably have Lahm just above him.
Yeah. All right, so we have got our joint 10. So at number 10, Francesco Totti. At number 9, Ronaldinho. At number 8, Philipp Lahm. At number 7, Sergio Ramos. Number 6, Paolo Maldini. Number 5, Andres Iniesta. Number 4, Xavi. Number 3, the original Ronaldo, R9. Number 2, Zidane. Number 1, Lionel Messi.
What a list.
There's not going to be a higher quality list of players that I'm going to do on this unless I do the top 10 players of all time. I think that's the only way that list is going to be beaten, to be honest.
Just slightly better than the top 10 Irish players that we did.
Yeah. I mean,
Chris Shields just lucky to miss out in this top 10 list.
Yeah, you know. They all played in the Prem as well. So,
pretty much.
They couldn't qualify. But yeah, cheers for coming on, Connell. And before we let you go, if you want to sort of say what you've got going on your podcast.
We're still going strong. It was kind of affected there by the fact that we're all sort of finishing up college and we've had to take a step back and naturally focus on real matters. We're still going strong. We do a podcast on sort of all things football. As I probably mentioned the last time I was on, it was originally a Premier League podcast, but we switched so that we could talk about all things football, including Irish football. And with the season coming to a close now in the European season, hopefully we'll be switching to purely League of Ireland podcast episodes. We do them once a month anyway, but hopefully we'll do them regularly. So if you want to educate yourself about a fairly niche division that we like to call the greatest league in the world, sort of tongue in cheek, then coming over to us. But until the end of the European season, we'll be talking about all things football, and we try to keep it lighthearted as well. We're not unbelievable analysts of the game, but we're just normal fellas. If that appeals to you, then absolutely check us out.
Yeah, I think that's what people want to listen to. Normal fellas, not top analysts. So yeah, cheers again for coming on, and remember to keep it.